You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the 47th episode of Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by Golden State head coach Steve Kerr to discuss how his three-year run as general manager of the Suns shaped him. Kerr, who has led the Warriors to three NBA titles in the past 4 years, could go down as one of the greatest coaches in league history. But before he got into coaching, he was what he would describe as a bad GM. His time with the Suns included a well-publicized rift with Mike D'Antoni, an unsuccessful trade for Shaquille O'Neal, and the hiring and firing of Terry Porter. After shoot-around Friday morning, just a couple of days before Golden State's final game against the Suns this season, I chatted with Kerr about all he learned from that period of his career. I'll have that interview right after the break.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Steve Kerr recently became the fastest coach in any major American sport to reach 300 wins. But not all of his career has been so defined by success, and when we caught up Friday morning after shoot-around, that's exactly the part I wanted to hear about. What did he learn from his three-year run as the Suns GM?
It's a great experience. I wasn't very good at the job, but I learned a ton. And biggest thing I learned was organizational dynamics and the relationships within the organization that are so important. Owner, GM, coach, you know, top players, those relationships have to all be in line to really function well as an organization. And I made some mistakes there that I learned from. We had some success too, but I think when you first take on a job like that, it's hard to really envision what you're getting into, mm-hmm. and what you're because you think about, well, I got to make the right draft picks and the right trades, yeah. and hire, you know, the right people, and that's all true. You have to do all that, but you really have to learn about organizational structure and communication and how the process has to look.
Was that ever a goal of yours when you finished playing to be a GM or
no,
be in front office?
No, my goal really was to be a coach. But I was a consultant for the Suns while I was doing television for TNT. And so Robert Sarver and I got to know each other.
You helped him get a meeting, right?
Yeah, like so he came to me. We both went to U of A. Mm-hmm. He was on. He knew Coach Olson in right. Tucson. Coach Olson called me one day and said, hey, could you meet with Robert Sarver? He wants to own an NBA team. So we connected. I helped introduce him to people in the league, David Stern, Jerry Colangelo. And I didn't realize it would happen so quickly, but, yeah. you know, within maybe a month of wow. meeting Robert and him meeting David Stern. Robert had bought the Suns, and it was kind of crazy how it all yeah. happened. But I was very happy with my life doing TV, you know, being at home with my kids.
How old were your kids at that point?
So this would have been 2004. So
middle school.
Yeah, so 12. Let's see, what's that? 15 years ago. The kids were 9, 7, and yeah. 3. So, and over the next yeah. several years, I was a consultant while I was doing the TV and got to know Robert, got to know people in the organization.
Would they just ask your opinions on basketball matters, basically? Like, give you a call. Did you have to go there much?
Not a whole lot as a consultant. I would take part in weekly phone calls with Brian Colangelo and David Griffin. Robert would be on the call sometimes, and just discussing basketball matters. And so I did that for a few years, and Brian left for Toronto to be GM there. And Robert asked me to be GM, and I did it.
Did that surprise you, or did that catch you off guard at all, or did you kind of see that coming?
Well, Brian left, and it took a year for me to take the job. I was David Griffin was running the operation. Mike D'Antoni was GM during that year, but Robert really wanted a separate GM, and he felt it was too much responsibility for the coach, for Mike, and I agreed with that. It's a tough thing to do both jobs, and so after a year, I decided to do it, and so I was there 2007 to 2010, and incredible learning experience, it was a whirlwind for sure,
kind of 0 to 100 type situation a little bit. Were you living in San Diego that entire time?
Well, I got a condo in Phoenix. My family stayed in San Diego, and I went back and forth.
Was that tough?
Part of the GM job gives you flexibility. I was going to a lot of college games and scouting games, and so I generally went to the home games with Phoenix. Occasionally, I'd go on a road game, but for the most part, when they were on the road, I'd get back and see my family. And it's so close. I mean, there were even days where I would literally fly in and fly home. I lived on Southwest Airlines for 3 years.
I love Southwest. Companion pass and everything?
You know it. It didn't take long to get the companion pass the way I was doing it. But it was tiring, too, to try to be a dad and a GM and fly back and forth, and I did enjoy a lot of aspects of it, but the main aspects that I enjoyed were the team building and being around the players,
the relationships.
But in some ways it was unsatisfying too, because as a GM you're not there every day on the floor with the players interacting. It's more, I've made the analogy before, but you're sort of the second cousin when at the family reunion, and so you're a little bit on the outside looking in, and I knew I wanted to be on the court. I knew I wasn't ready to coach, so I fulfilled my contract, and
it was a 3-year contract.
3 years, yeah. I think there was an option both ways for the fourth year. I think we just had a 3-year contract.
Okay.
We didn't have an option. 3-year deal, and at the end of the contract, I knew that I wanted to be home more. It was a difficult way to live, and we made the conference finals that last year, 2010, which was very satisfying. A really good year. Had some good young players with Goran Dragic and Robin Lopez. And I felt pretty good about, kind of where we were. There were a lot of rocky points along the way. But we had a good season that year. Contract was up, and I just felt like, it's time for a change. And in retrospect, 100% glad I did it. But I made some mistakes that have helped me with this job to understand organizational structure and dynamics. But, you know, some ways I'd like to have a do-over on some things, too. But that's life.
Looking at your tenure there, it seems like you did a pretty nice job in the draft. Like some of the trades, maybe I know you've expressed you have some regrets about some of the trades maybe you did. What is that kind of how you look at it? Like you feel good about better about the draft aspect? Or
I we did okay. I don't think anything. I don't think anything jumped out in terms of like. You know, we hit a home run here, or you know, we did this or we did that. We were fine. We were okay. Got a couple good players in the draft. Missed on a couple guys. The big thing with that team that I realized, and a lot of people warned me about when I took the job, was this. I came in kind of at the end of the run. Beginning of the end of the run. You know, in the phase of. Nash and Marion getting older, and so that run began in 4-5 with the signing of Nash.
Yeah,
was it 3-4? It was 4-5. Team was really groundbreaking, exciting. By the time I became GM, 7-8, we were in that phase where it was you knew it was gonna. It's going to get tricky as right. your key guys get older, as it does for every team, every organization. So I tried to navigate that. The big move we made was we traded for Shaq in 2008, I think it was. And we, as an organization, we looked at it and decided, you know what, let's swing for the fences here. We got an older team. We didn't feel like we could get past the Spurs playing small.
Right.
We had tried it. We lost twice to them in the playoffs. And so we went for it, and it didn't work out. And that was a stressful time.
Yeah.
Also, I think maybe the most difficult time of my tenure was I hired Terry Porter as coach, who was a teammate and somebody I have – incredible respect for, and it didn't work out, and I had to fire him. And, it was probably the most difficult thing I've ever had to do. Relieve someone who you like and respect and admire so much of his duties, but it had to be done. I could feel it. We could feel it as an organization. That's where I really got to know Alvin Gentry. Alvin took Terry's spot, did a great job. It's really the reason I brought Alvin here when I became the Warriors coach. It was my relationship with him during those year and a half when he was the head coach and I was a GM. We became really, really close during that time.
Did this experience kind of embolden your desire to become a coach? When you stepped down, did you?
I knew when I stepped down, I knew I would never be a GM again, and I knew I wanted to coach. But I sort of felt that way even before.
And your kid, you wanted to spend a few years right with your kids while they're still in high school.
Yeah, and that was one of the big games. One of the big things, 2010. I had two kids in high school, one in junior high. Wanted to be there for their games. TNT offered me my job back. Doug Collins left, went back to Philadelphia to coach, and it opened up one of the seats in the broadcast booth, and they came in and offered me my old job back, which I loved. And that was when they got the NCAA tournament rights with CBS, and so I went back to TV doing NBA games, but also NCAA tournament games and some college games, which was really fun. And the TV gig was the best thing for me at the time, because it allowed me to stay in the game and stay active, but really be on a great schedule. Summer off, a lot of times just one game a week, so I felt like I was present for my my kids' lives those last few years of high school.
The real reason you wanted to be a coach, though, right, was because you wanted those charter flights and not Southwest, right? That was that was the ulterior motive, right?
Exactly.
How do you think, obviously you have a great relationship with Bob, do you think your experience as a GM has just helped you understand what he does and his responsibilities in a unique way and has helped your relationship?
It's a big part of it. And, you know, one of the things Bob and I talked about from the beginning, literally like the first week on the job, is I told him about my mistakes that I made with Mike D'Antoni, my coach in Phoenix. He told me some of the mistakes he felt he made with Mark Jackson. Both of us were new GMs. You know, he was an agent. I was a former player. And we knew just from our experiences. We learned how precarious an organization can be if the relationships aren't aligned and functioning well. And we both expressed some remorse for the way, for the mistakes that we had made. And I think that strengthened our bond right away. And we were determined not to let any of that happen to us. And so from the very beginning, Bob and I were aligned. And we've been that way ever since. We've become best of friends. And we feel like, I really feel like, Bob and I are partners coaching this team.
You know, right.
He's been so valuable behind the scenes, conversations with our players, conversations with me.
Right.
We talk every single day. He is a brilliant GM. And I think that's one of the things that I think people probably don't quite get. When you look at it as a fan, you look at a GM's performance, you just think, you look at the draft. And
right.
You look at trades,
right.
And you go, well, he's a good GM or he's a bad GM based on that.
Right.
And obviously, those are the key traits of a good GM. You've got to be able to put together talent. But the job itself is so much more than that. It's interrelationship, interorganizational relationship building, psychologist, support.
Which is also true with coaching.
It's so we're both trying for the same thing, but we come at it from different jobs. But we support one another, and we really feel like we're partners in this whole thing as we try to guide the ship.
You were talking about that second cousin syndrome.
Yeah.
It seems like, being around the team a little bit, it doesn't seem like, I don't look at Bob like that. It feels like he's a daily, even if he's not here daily, it feels like he's a daily presence with the players, and he has those personal relationships.
He does, and I think part of that is because he's been here now for a while. I think this is, his seventh year as GM, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
And we've had a core group that's been here a while, and we've all really developed close relationships. But he's really mastered that position as, the guy who is going to support everything I do, support the players, not enable anybody, but motivate them and empower them. And that's what he does with me. That's what he does with our players. And I know that everything Bob does is with my support in mind, and he knows that the reverse is true too, and the players all know that. We're aligned on everything, and we work together, and we know what our job is. Our job is to help our players develop and for them to have great careers and for our team to win, and that's what we're working on every day.
That conversation with Bob, was that, you said that was your first week, was that over dinner, was that just do you remember that?
I think it was just, I was in the office every day. It was summertime, and we were meeting, every day, just kind of informally, just hanging out, and all those things came out during those days in the office. It's like July and August, everything's so quiet.
Right.
So it was a good time for us to get to know one another.
All the beat riders are on vacation,
exactly.
And you guys, cool. Appreciate it, Steve.
You got it.
Good talking to you.
Right.
I want to thank Steve for joining me on this week's podcast. Always great catching up with him and chatting Warriors. Warriors Off Court is part of the San Francisco Chronicle podcast network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, we'd love it if you subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've got a minute to give us a quick review, that helps us build our audience so we can keep growing. Follow me on Twitter at @con_cron and email me at cleturno@sfchronicle.com. Support Warriors Off Court and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. There are print and digital editions. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.